Hello and welcome to the Doc Talk podcast. I'm Kenny Walter, editor of ACP Live. Psychiatrist that specializes in ADHD. Dr. Diaz spoke about where we are in terms of ADHD care and what needs to change before we can improve this care. Dr. Diaz also spoke about how the disease evolves throughout life and what are some of the challenges that this patient population regularly face. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Diaz. Currently, where are the greatest gaps in ADHD care, and how do you suggest we close these gaps?
There's probably a couple of gaps in the care and treatment for children, teens, and adults with ADHD. One of them is actually a lack of recognition, awareness, and sort of understanding of ADHD, which often leads to under or misdiagnosis for some populations. There's a big sort of myth that ADHD is actually overdiagnosed, when in fact we know that we are probably missing large groups of different populations that are not being identified and provided with access to treatment. So one of the gaps is definitely underdiagnosis, under recognition of ADHD. And then related to that, a lack of access to good, effective therapy and medication options for ADHD.
Okay. When thinking about therapy, do you think the pandemic and the advent of more telepsychiatry can, in fact, close some of those gaps, particularly in the rural parts of the country who then would have access to doctors in the big city?
I do. I think, you know, if there was one sort of silver lining for the mental health community that came out of the pandemic, it's really having to rely on telehealth services and being able, and there's many places that have already sort of proven that this works and it can be done effectively, but we had to do it as a whole, right? Everybody had to kind of get on board. And what we ended up finding is that it could be done for a large group of patients who needed mental health treatment really well and really effectively. Not for everyone, because there are some conditions that are best treated in person and the virtual format just does not bode well. But a lot of it was quite positive. We were able to see more families. We were able to have families come to therapeutic sessions together as a family, as opposed to having one parent come, another parent is still working, those kinds of things. So we really saw some real enhancements to treatment engagement with telehealth services. So I think we're all looking forward to being able to use that more.
Interesting. Now, I think the general public views ADHD as the third grader who's fidgeting in the classroom kind of thing, but how does the disease evolve from the child with it to the adolescent teenager with it to adulthood? Does the disease present itself any differently as you go through life?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you know one person with ADHD, you only know one person with ADHD because you can't really map on everybody's presentation to everyone else, right? So ADHD looks very different. It's like a fingerprint. And so ADHD looks very different, not only across people, but across ages. And so one of the first things you ask is, you know, we might misunderstand ADHD as like the hyperactive third grader. So the first thing I want to highlight is the predominantly inattentive subtype of ADHD is often quite unrecognized because they're missing a lot of learning and probably really being impacted by ADHD. And so in terms of how it progresses over the course of development, one of the things we sort of know from research is that we often sort of cite or quote this sort of one third, right? A third of the population will continue to have pretty notable symptoms of ADHD all the way through adulthood. Another third might have moderate to mild symptoms with some really kind of nice progression where they're managing it really well. And then another third might actually not even meet diagnostic criteria for ADHD after into adulthood. So the population that we're most concerned about is the population of, you know, ADHD children and teens who really go on to have continued functional impairment related to work, school, being able to, you know, sort of advance careers, et cetera, because they have so much trouble sustaining attention. But one other thing to mention is that we do know that inattention tends to be pretty stable. So the problems with attention tend to be pretty stable over the course of development, whereas hyperactivity and impulsivity do tend to die down just a little bit. And if they are still present, they look a little different, right? And teenagers, it might be like speeding when they're driving or taking more risks when they're with hanging out with their friends. Whereas in childhood, that might look like jumping off a really high step when you shouldn't do that, or crossing the street without noticing that the light hasn't turned yet. So it does look a little different over the course of development, but can still cause some very notable concerns.
Thank you. Now, you spoke about the behavioral therapy and the medication part of it. Like many other psych diseases, there's the non-pharmacological component and the pharmacological component. Where do we need better treatments? Are we pretty good with therapy right now? We know what therapies work for which patients, and we need better medication, or is it vice versa?
Actually, I think we have a pretty good grasp on most difficulties related to ADHD, both behaviorally. We have a lot of behavioral interventions that have really been proven to be really effective at reducing and managing the functional impairment associated with ADHD. So I think we're doing pretty well there. We also have a wide range of medication options that have been long tested for the treatment of ADHD. So we have some really nice treatment options. Where I think we're still sort of continuing to develop and evolve some of these additional treatment options. First is actually with regard to executive functioning deficits. So organizational skills training. We have some really nice emerging research by some of my colleagues and other people who specialize in ADHD, such as Richard Gallagher and Howard Abakoff, who've really been focusing on how we can actually teach children executive functioning skills. Because in the past, we've seen that we can tell them those skills, and then they go to school and they don't use those skills, right? And so we're just now really starting to get some nice data on interventions specifically for that area. And then maybe a second area where we really still need to continue to do some work are school-based interventions. We have them, but the implementation of those interventions can often be a little tricky, and so not always implemented as designed.
Okay, and one of the things I'm interested in the crux of any disease really is we have a large population of the baby boomers are becoming seniors, and I know you're a child psychiatrist, but do you have any thoughts on how to manage the psych in general, I guess, with seniors, where maybe 50 years ago, seniors didn't seek mental health services, and now it's going to be at least a lot more prevalent than it was. So is this going to be a problem? Is this going to really put a burden on psychiatrists to kind of enter a new field or a new subgroup of patients?
You know, I don't think so. I'm hopeful that they will actually be seeking treatment, because one of the things we know is that, you know, baby boomer and before, seeking mental health care, the stigma related to mental health illness was still quite high. And so mental health treatment was still low. And so we've seen a really nice progression over the last, sort of few decades, where people are more open, more receptive to seeking treatment. So I guess one of the things I'd be curious to see is whether they actually do come in for treatment, and whether they're noticing things like anxiety or depression or late stage, difficulties that could benefit from therapy. I'd love to have them actually coming in high numbers. I would love for that to be the case.
Great. Now, for ADHD, you probably hear this a lot for any psych disorder, and it's probably more of a novice view, but it's not a catch-all, it's not a cure, but how important is lifestyle interventions, diet, reducing stress, refraining from drugs and alcohol and smoking and things like that? How important is it to at least help go along with ADHD, help ease the treatment and things like that?
I think lifestyle changes and really developing healthy habits and routines, it is behavioral therapy for ADHD. Essentially, what we're trying to teach is self-management, right? And this is why I say it's so important to identify in what way is ADHD actually getting in your way, right? Like down to the specifics. Are you the person who leaves home all the time without things, and then you end up having to run back to grab things, and so you're always late to work? That is an area of what we would call functional impairment. You're arriving late to work every day. You could eventually be fired for that. So now we need to intervene. And where is the intervention? Well, maybe we need a specific skill or strategy for organizing your materials that are prepared at the door before you leave. Seems so simple, right? Like super straightforward, but really that is what behavioral therapy is all about, is identifying in what ways ADHD is getting in the way and really coming up with some very specific habits and skills to prevent those impairments. So lifestyle, stress management, good sleep. If people could see me, I would be underlining this, right? Good sleep is super important. And taking really good care of yourself overall will help for you to maintain healthy habits that then really help you manage your symptoms of ADHD. But as soon as one, it's like dominoes. As soon as one domino falls, everything starts to tumble. And for people with ADHD, being able to kind of get back on track is harder than it is if you didn't have ADHD. And we want to prevent the tumbling dominoes from the beginning.
Okay. Now, one of the things about unique about the pandemic is it truly is global. Everyone you know has been impacted in some way. It's not a hurricane where if you know people, you know, an hour away, they had nothing. It's not a personal problem. It's truly a global event. Does that help patients deal with stress because they understand that they could reach out to someone in California and they're doing the same thing? They know there are other people suffering in the exact same way as they are.
Yeah. You know, I think the answer is yes. I mean, I think the fact that everybody had to go through this and no one was spared, you know, different levels, different impacts for different reasons. We get that. But the fact that everyone had to go through this means that there's at least a sort of normalization, more understanding, more awareness, right? More support for people to understand that there was a very real thing that got in the way of our day-to-day lives. So this is not the case of like misery loves company. It's more the case of like, we're all in this together one way or another. Regardless of any, you know, polarization in terms of vaccines and masks, it doesn't even matter at this juncture. What matters is we're all going through it. And so it does, for a number of reasons, create this opportunity for everybody to kind of understand that everybody's affected in one way or another.
Okay. And do you believe there are many patients undiagnosed with ADHD? I mean, psych more than probably other medical specialties, there's probably a higher rate of undiagnosed patients. But did COVID-19 kind of shine a light on this and is leading to more people seeking a diagnosis and seeking initial care?
Yeah, I think there are certainly a large group of kids and teens who are still undiagnosed that should be diagnosed. You know, part of the reason for that is that in order to seek mental health support and a diagnosis for what you're seeing in your child, you sort of have to have a name or an explanation for it that leads to potential mental is part of the reason that a lot of kids might be undiagnosed is sort of the explanation that parents and teachers have for their behavior. And so if it's more discipline focused, then that's what they're going to use instead, which is one of the reasons that we often don't see kids showing up until much later when all of the parenting efforts that parents are using still aren't working, right? And so then they're like, wait, there must be something wrong. I should probably see somebody about this. And sometimes that means that they're not coming in until much later. So there are large groups of kids and teens that are undiagnosed, that could be diagnosed. And we're sort of hoping that parents and teachers are observing and noticing where these real difficulties lie and getting them the support that they need.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's all the questions I have. Is there anything else you want to say?
Maybe one last point, you know, because I think this comes up a lot when I talk to parents and teachers. You know, coming in to see a mental health professional doesn't mean that your child is automatically going to be diagnosed. If you see some concern that is sort of raising some red flags, an evaluation is the first step. We're not automatically going to slap the ADHD label on a child who's having trouble focusing. We're going to assess what's going on and really, but it might be something else. And so I don't want parents to avoid coming into getting evaluations, assuming that that means it's going to put them on one specific path. If you see something, say something, right? It's kind of like, it's kind of like what the subway system yes. suggests. So I think that's my final tip.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to thank Dr. Diaz for joining me for the interesting conversation about the state of ADHD care. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Also look for an upcoming Coping After COVID episode featuring Dr. Diaz as we continue to discuss the state of ADHD care in wake of a pandemic. As always, I hope you enjoyed this conversation and thanks for listening.